Well, thank you for coming back again this afternoon at 5 o'clock. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you. I managed to get a 30-minute nap in. I'm trying not to take yours now. I certainly have enjoyed being here and getting to meet so many of you. I'm just so impressed with the congregation and the many, many young people that you have and what that can hold for the future. You just do a good job with these young folks. I appreciated that opportunity to get to meet with them. And thanks for the work that went into your luncheon and all the food that was prepared and the arrangements. I sure enjoyed it and appreciated being able to share that with you. If you have a Bible and would like to, I'm just going to be in the third chapter of Colossians this evening, so I'm not going to do any PowerPoint. Come back and be with us the next three evenings if you can, and I'm going to go through a little booklet that I did about primitive Christianity, about the importance of following the instructions of the apostles, that we have the ability to do that, to read the Bible text and understand what it says, and that we need to be careful about how we associate ourselves together in churches in accord with that primitive path. But this evening, I thought I would take this opportunity to teach to you one of my favorite lessons out of this third chapter of Colossians, which is an intensely practical chapter. It's an intensely practical chapter in the midst of a book that is a pretty sophisticated kind of theological discussion of the primacy of Jesus Christ and how Jesus is sufficient in every way, really directed in many ways at the Gnostics of the New Testament period, people who claim supernatural knowledges and revelation and additional information, as opposed to just Jesus Christ. It's a book about the all-sufficiency of Jesus Christ. At the beginning of the third chapter, you get an assertion of two principles that the Apostle Paul says we ought to build our whole life upon, and that if we do that, that it solves all problems. Let's read the first four verses. If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above and not on things on the earth. For ye are dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall ye also appear with him in glory. Now, I want to talk with you in just a moment about the two principles which I say if we can get them straight and get them in our life, that we have the solution to all problems. And that is really where the third chapter of Colossians goes. But let me acknowledge just quickly that the third chapter of Colossians does begin with an if. If ye then be risen with Christ. So, for the benefit of any that may be here this evening who are not Christians, let's just go back and take a quick look at that if in the second chapter, beginning in verse 10. He really begins this section with this statement, and ye are complete in him, which is the head of all principality and power. So that's what we're going to be talking about this evening, is how to be complete, so that we can be fully functioning Christians, behaving in every way as we ought to behave. For you are complete in him, which is the head of all principality and power, in whom also you are circumcised with a circumcision made without hands, in the putting off of the body of the sins of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ, buried with him in baptism, wherein also you are risen with him through the faith of the operation of God who has raised him from the dead. Now that's where the if begins, if you then be risen with Christ. He says what we need to do is become complete Christians. And the way we can do that, he says, is to be set apart, marked as Christians, circumcised, as the Jews were circumcised to mark them as Jews. He says, you've been marked as God's people. And that all begins when you are born again, buried with him in baptism, and risen to walk in newness of life. So if you're in our audience this evening, you never have professed faith in Jesus, repented and been baptized for the remission of your sins, I will tell you that's where life of the Christian begins. That's where you need to begin with what you need to do. But that's where we begin in chapter 4. If you've been buried with him, let me tell you two transformations that he says takes place. In verses 3 and 4, he said, if you're going to be what you ought to be as a Christian, the first thing you have to do, or actually the second thing in his sequence, but one of the things he says is you need to figure out who you are. That you are Christ. You're dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God. You know? Do you know who you are this morning or this afternoon? That's a good question. And again, it seems like a silly question in a lot of ways. Well, of course I know who I am. But the truth is, most of us don't think about that very much. One of the things I do when I travel around, I travel so much, and I spend a lot of time sitting around in airports, and I'll tell you what I do for entertainment, sitting around in airports, is I'll just sit there and watch people go by. And that is pretty entertaining. I'll tell you what you will see. You will see a lot of things. Now, here's somebody come walking by, some guy, he had on a big 10-gallon hat and cowboy boots, and he thinks he's John Wayne. And another fellow's come by, and he's got his golf shirt on and everything, and he thinks he's Tiger Woods. That might be me. And then if you sit there long enough, here's somebody will come walking by, and he's got stuff sculpted in him everywhere and stuck here and there. And standing around. And you say, well, who does he think he is? Well, I tell you what, he thinks he's somebody. That's why he looks like that. And we all have a self-definition of who we are. And whoever you think you are will have everything to do with what you do in life and how you behave yourself. So the first thing I want to suggest to you this afternoon is that all of your life depends on getting a self-definition. You've got to figure out who you are. And if you are a Christian, what that rests upon is this declaration that I am Christ. And I'm going to behave myself that way. All right. We'll look at the consequences of that in a minute. Second thing he says that you have to build your life on, number one, you have to figure out who you are. And number two, you have to figure out where you're going. That is what it says in the first two verses of Colossians 3. That you have to set your things and your affection on things above, where Christ sits on the right hand of God. And that our affection is set on things in heaven and not on things on earth. Now, I've never really been a great goal setter in my life. I've never really set out to do something. I've just tried to do the best I could and ended up wherever I ended up. But goal setting in some ways is very important. I discovered a few years ago the importance of goal setting, the role that you play in my life. And when these hotels and airlines for the first time started giving premiums, they gave me points and rewards and so on. The first one I remember was Holiday Inn. I got a letter from Holiday Inn that said, if you stay in a Holiday Inn, we'll give you a point every time you stay. if you get enough points, we'll send two people anywhere in the world into the Holiday Inn and put you up for a week. Well, I said, I just believe I'll do that then. And then, of course, I read the fine print and discovered no ordinary human being could do it. but I just decided I'd try to do it anyhow. So I went in, got my Holiday Inn book, and looked up, found me one in Scotland, which is where I like to go better than any place. So I started staying at Holiday Inn. And every time I'd hold a meeting, I'd go stay at the Holiday Inn. And if there wasn't one in that town, I'd stay in 1.5 miles away so I could get my points. And one summer, they said, well, we'll give double points if two people stay. So every time I went somewhere, I made one of the kids go with me. there were a few times when nobody could go from home, and I actually got somebody there to come stay with me. So I get double points. I ended up spending the night with people I didn't like very well. But I'll tell you what I did. I got those points. And we went to Scotland. But in the midst of all that, I figured out that actually Scotland was not where I want to go. Where I want to go is heaven. And what the Apostle Paul says is that if you figure out that is where you really want to go, if you want to go to heaven, it'll change your life. It'll have an impact on everything that you do. Several, 15, 20 years ago, I spent my whole summer all summer preaching, mostly in California. And I had all my kids with me, 5 kids. My youngest son, Robert, he's a good golfer. He played golf with me. So I'd preach a week, and then we'd vacation a week. Robert and I'd play golf. And every now and then, in the course of that, I would think to myself, I sure am enjoying this. Sure enjoy being with my kids. I hope that I get to live for a few more years as they do and enjoy it. But then I think, but now, really what I hope is that I'll live in such a way and they'll live in such a way that we can just be together forever in heaven. And I want to tell you, if that's where you really want to go, if you think there's something you can offer me that would make me give that up, then you just mistake. If you think there's some kind of trivial little human pleasure that would be worth getting that up for, you know where you're going? That I'm a Christian and I'm on my way to heaven? I want to tell you that there is nothing there that ought to be able to make us lose that if we have our goals set. So, if you know who you are and you know where you're going, let me show you just real quickly how I believe that will influence your life. It'll influence your life too. But I'll talk about that in just a few minutes at the end of this lesson. Let's begin reading verse 5. Mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence and covetousness, which is idolatry. For which things sake the wrath of God cometh on the children of disobedience, in the which ye also walked sometime when ye lived in them, but now ye put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. Lie not one to another, seeing ye put off the old man with his deeds, and have put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge, after the image of him that created. Well, let me tell you the first thing he says, in terms of our conduct, that will change your life. He said, when you become a Christian, what it does is it changes your life, and you will behave yourself like you ought to. That you won't be a liar, you won't steal, you won't cheat, you won't be a fornicator, you won't be a drunkard. Because some of you used to do those things, but you don't do them anymore. Now, if you're visiting, by the way, with this group of people this evening, you're a Christian, I would challenge you to look at them and see that they are not like other people, that they are different. That kind of puts it on you guys. But that's exactly what he says. He says, I will tell you, when you're risen with Christ, your life is different. But now let me tell you something. I have preached an awful lot of sermons in my life telling people they ought to behave themselves. And I preached a lot of sermons in my life to people telling them they ought to behave themselves, and they didn't want to behave themselves. I preached a lot of sermons telling people they ought to study the Bible. They didn't want to study the Bible. They weren't interested. Or telling people they ought to come to church, they didn't want to come to church. So now this sermon is not to tell you that you ought to behave yourself. I'm going to tell you how to behave yourself. And the way is to figure out who you are and where you're going. I've said through the years, I didn't want to talk to how do you get young people to behave yourself. Always been in congregations where we had a lot of young folks in the congregation. And so I studied, well, how can we get these young people to behave? And I have thought, I've come up with a couple of pretty good ideas. I thought one time what we need to do is build two concentration camps. One for girls and one for boys. But I decided, well, that probably won't work. They'll probably figure out some way to crawl out of there. And so, how can you get them to behave? My wife and I have five children. Three daughters. Every time one of those daughters would get to be about 16, I'll tell you what goes through my mind. Well, now, what am I going to do with this girl? I know another 8 or 10 years she'll want to go out with boys. And the time may even come when she wants to go without me riding in the back seat. And what is she going to do? I'll tell you what she's going to do. She's going to do exactly what she wants to do. That's what you do when you're 16. That's what you do when you're 79, too. That's what everybody does. And there isn't but one way that you will end up in your life doing what's right, and that is if you are what's right. If you figure out that's not who I am, and that's not what I'm going to do, and I'm not going to give up the prize, the goal that I set my whole life on, for the trivial pleasures of this life. And however old you are, wherever you go and whatever you do, I want to tell you the solution to the problem of how to behave yourself is to start by figuring out your own character and your own desires. So, you young folks, now you think about that. And what you need to decide in life is you need to decide exactly who I am. My youngest daughter was named Lee. And Lee she's always been a kind of feisty young lady. But at one point in her late teenage, she started signing her letters and communications. She had signed L-E-I-G-H, but that wasn't her name. So I told her one time, I said, Lee, that is not your name. I said, your name is L-E-E, as in Robert E. Lee. And I said, what you have to do is you have an identity crisis. Now, you need to get your identity straight. So that's what all of us have to do. It's figure out who we are and figure out what we're trying to get out of life. Now I quickly let me read through the rest of this chapter with you and tell you how this solves all of our problems. First 11, where there's neither Greek nor Jew, circumcision nor uncircumcision, barbarian, Scythian, bond nor free, but Christ is all and all. Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, vows of mercy, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering, forbearing one another, forgiving one another, and forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. And above all these things, put on charity, which is the bond of perfectness. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to the which also you're called in one body, and in thankful. I'm not going to talk about that passage much, but I'll tell you what it is. It is a recipe for how to be a good, productive group of Christians. And that is for every person to simply be doing what they can do. Anybody that fruits very much has had someone come by and say, "Brother Harold, I'm just so disgusted because I've done this and so, and nobody seems to appreciate it, and somebody else is not doing what they ought to do, and I just feel like I'm going to quit because it is totally unappreciated." Well, if that's what you're doing, then I can understand why you quit. But let me tell you what ought to motivate every one of us in the things we do. It's not because of what somebody else has done. Or it's not because I don't like somebody else. Or it's not because nobody appreciates what I do. The only reason I do the things that I do is because that's who I am. And I'm trying to go to heaven. So I would exhort you, if you want to have a good, strong, functioning, productive group of Christians, where that has to start is with every Christian understanding who they are and what it is that they're trying to do, so that they then will be totally unaffected by whether anybody likes it or what anybody else is doing. The things I do, I can assure you at this point in my life, the only thing that motivates me to be here or to do the things that I do is not because of what anybody thinks, but because of who I am and because of what it is that I'm trying to do with my life. But not quickly, let's read verse 6. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in our hearts to the Lord. We spoke to the Lord in our prayer this evening about helping us to enrich our worship and to make it what it ought to be. That's something that always concerns all of us. How can we be sure that we're worshiping in the way that we ought to worship, and that our singing is what it ought to be? You know, I go to a lot of congregations where some young person will come up to me and say, "Brother Harold, this congregation is just so dead. You know, these same old people just sit in these same old seats and sing these same old songs, say these same old prayers. It doesn't really mean anything to them." And I will tell you, I go a lot of places where it looks to me like there may be something to that. A lot of times when I get up to preach after about 5 minutes, I feel like waving my hands to see if anything's alive. But if you say that, you know, there are a lot of dead folks here, well, I have been there. But I think a lot of times what we do is we get the cure wrong. And well, how can we do something about that? And we might say, well, you know, I think what we need to do is we need to sit around in a circle and turn the lights down low. Well, I want to tell you, in India and elsewhere, I have worshipped sitting on the floor and in circles and every other way in good light and bad light. But I'll tell you this, you get a bunch of dead Christians, and sit them around in a circle and turn the lights down low, you'll just have a bunch of dead Christians that can't see each other very well. That won't solve their problems. And if we want our worship to be what it'll be, then we'll have to be what we want. My father was a physician in Jacksonville, Florida, and the congregation where that helped start the congregation where I'm now an elder. And he was a great Christian man, helped a lot of people at the time, converted a lot of people. But as he got old, he got cantankerous. Actually, he got more cantankerous. And anyhow, he would sit right here on the front seat of that congregation, which had grown to maybe 150 people at that point. But they all knew him and all loved him and appreciated what he'd done for them. He was hard to hear. And he'd sit up on the front seat and he'd put his hand behind his ear. And the preacher, Harold Adams, would come stand right in front of my daddy so my daddy could hear. And on several occasions, they had a visiting preacher come in and they forgot to tell him about that. So as soon as he started preaching up in the pulpit, my daddy would wave and point and come down. Well, and you know, that never bothered us. Because they just knew him and appreciated him and loved him. And I often thought my daddy got paid back in his later years. A lot of the things he'd done. But at his funeral, one of the deacons in that congregation, who was a lawyer in Jacksonville, came up to me at the graveside service and he said, Eddie said, I want to tell you something about your daddy. He said, your daddy taught me a lot of things. But he never taught me anything that meant more to me than to just watch him struggle up to that front row in his last few years and sing his song. Now, if you want to sing with grace in your heart, then you spend your life saying, I'm a Christian. And get close to going to heaven. And then you can sing with grace in your heart. Now I'm just like everybody else. I get sometimes forgetful about what I'm doing. Sometimes I will tell myself when we're singing. Now you ought to sing tonight as if this is the last time you were ever going to get to sing. Then, if you really know who you are, and then, if you really got your sight set on going to heaven, there's no trouble for that same increasing heart. 17, and whatsoever you do in word or deed, do all. In the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God and the Father by Him. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husband, as is fitting, Lord. Husband, love your wives, and be not bitter against them. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well pleasing unto the Lord. Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord, and not unto men. Now I'll tell you what you got before you this evening, folks. It's a solution to every problem. He said, if you'll figure out who you are and where you're going, it'll make good wives out of you, it'll make good husbands out of you, and it'll make good parents out of you, and it'll make good children out of you, and it'll make good employers out of you, and it'll make good employees out of you, and it'll make good citizens out of you. And whatever you do, just do it to the Lord, because that's who you are. Wives, in the audience this evening, I'll tell you what you need to do. You need to submit yourself to your husband. You know why you need to do that? I'll tell you why. You need to do it because your husband is always right. Well, maybe not. That is not. Why? You know why you do that? Because that's who you are. And because that is what the Lord would have us to do. And husbands, I'll tell you what you need to do. You need to love your wife. I've had, on a number of occasions in my life, beginning many years ago, some young man come up to me and said, "Brother Harold, I just don't know what I'm going to do. I don't love my wife anymore." And when I was young, there were several occasions when I didn't really know how to answer that. But I don't have an answer now. If you're going to tell me that now, I'll tell you what the answer is. Well, repent and do it. If you want to read a commandment, this is not a suggestion. Husbands, love your wives. That's a commandment. And you know why you love your wife? Oh, there probably are quite a number of reasons why you like her. And she may be good to you. But I do it because that's who I am. And because I'm trying to go to heaven. And if that's who you are, and that's where you're going, then you'll be a good husband. You'll be a good husband. And I will tell you, I do believe that is the answer to every question. Life may be more complicated than that, but not much. I've often said, there are lots of things I'm not very good at. Many things my wife's better at than I am. I never have been radiating this sick people because I never have been sick. But, and I always feel clumsy when I go visit in the hospital. I'll stumble around and say, "Well, I hope you don't die." And they're glad to see me leave. And I have kind of felt the same way about counseling through the years. I've never been a very good counselor. I would try when somebody comes to me and says, "Well, Brother Harold, I'm doing this and so, and I know all of these doing, but I just don't know what to do about it." And I will try to give them some advice, but finally I'll say, "Well, if I was you then, I'd just quit. Do it." And life may be more complicated than that, but it's not much. Come on. Now, you want to know what you need to do, dear Christian? Is you need to behave yourself, and you need to do what's right, and you need to quit doing things that are wrong. And say, "Oh, well, I just can't do that." Yeah, you can do it. If you change yourself, if you're risen with Christ, and say, "That's not who I am." Now, you'll behave yourself like whoever you think you are. But if you can walk out of here this evening and say, "I've been risen with Christ and I am a Christian and I'm going to act like a Christian and look like a Christian and talk like a Christian. And I'm going to do it because there's nowhere I'm going. I'm going to heaven and I really have that goal in sight. And nothing is going to take away from it." Well, if you're in our audience this evening and want to find your life, isn't it remarkable when we read about people in the Scriptures who changed their life? Who were derelicts, persecutors, faults in every way, but they changed their life. I've seen that in my life. I've seen people turn their lives around. But you can't arm wrestle it to do it. You can't force it into a mold that you want to make. There's not one way you can do it. And that is to become complete in Christ, be buried with Him in Bethlehem, risen to walk in newness of life, and then conform to Him. And say, "Now I'm dead and Christ lives in me." If you're here this evening, accept the invitation. We invite you all to come.